Good morning, everyone. We're going to go ahead and get started. Facilities is bringing some more chairs, so there are some seats. Yeah, okay, great. They're bringing them now. So if you can indulge us for another 2 minutes before we get started. Thank you. So I'm just going to get started and just pardon the interruption when they bring more chairs in. So good morning again. My name is Mighty Fine, and I am employed by the American Public Health Association. So if you have great things to say about this meeting, you can come see me. Not so great things, don't come see me. Right, exactly. So thanks for being here with us today to talk about addressing campus sexual assault. We have a great panel for you all today, and I think we can all agree that this is a major public health problem, and we're here to talk about solutions. So I'll briefly introduce the panelists for the day. I'll have them talk a little bit more about themselves, but because it's such a sensitive subject matter, I asked them all to share with me some fun or interesting facts about themselves. So I'll give you their title, and then I'll share with you, if that's okay, the fun and interesting facts that they share with me. So first up, we have Dr. Deb Oury. She is the director of the National Center for Injury Prevention and Control at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, more affectionately known as NCIPC and at CDC. And her fun fact actually is she was the only cheerleader that was also a member of the math team. So that's pretty fun fact, right? And she also had never been to Disney World as a child, but has been five times since with her daughter, actually, so that's pretty awesome too. Next up, we have Jessie Lyons, who is the Associate Director of Green Dot. She specializes in training and curriculum development, and she also shared with us that in her spare time, she can be found rocking out to the Beatles, which I thought was super cool, playing with her dog and watching sci-fi with her husband, who she is expecting her first child in April, right? Congratulations. And last but not least, we have LB Klein, who has dedicated her academic and professional career to ending gender-based violence. She's currently an independent consultant, and she also shared with us that she is a fan of handwritten notes, which I love too, right? Isn't it awesome? And this electronic age when you actually get a card from your grandmother or somebody, I think that's super cool. My grandmother's handwriting, I can't really read, but you know. Right. So I thought that was awesome. She also, like Jessie, likes sci-fi, but she has a particular interest in zombies, which I thought was really cool. Post-apocalyptic kind of situation there. She enjoys good food with company and often enjoys breaking out into dance breaks. So I guess during her presentation, she may treat us to a... Okay. Or maybe we can do a flash mob or something. All right, so I just wanted to present those fun facts and inject a little bit of levity into a very serious topic. So without further ado, Dr. Oury.
Well, good morning, all. Look forward to having a lot of time to, I hope, have discussion after this. We were keeping our presentations fairly brief so that we could have at least 20 or 30 minutes at the end for discussion. So Mighty gave you my current title. Before joining CDC about a year ago now, I was also an ER doc for 15 years and so did a lot of sexual assault exams in the emergency room. I was also a professor at Emory, to where I was the deputy Title IX coordinator, so got to do a lot of the intakes and I was also the University Senate President, so I got to see it from the university level. So this topic is near and dear to my heart from all the different aspects, and look forward to discussing it with you. Oh, my disclosure slide's not in there.
Oh, you took it out?
Yeah. I was teasing Mighty because he showed it to me, and there was a misspelling of my name, so I knew I hadn't done it. But I have no disclosures to report other than I work at the CDC. So all too often now you see on the news about sexual violence, and it's one of those things to where we know that college campus sexual violence isn't really a new issue. We're just seeing a lot more about it in the news. It's actually not media sensationalism, though, when you look at the statistics. It's real. And I know some folks are not necessarily happy with the additional attention that campus sexual violence has gotten when compared to other forms of sexual violence, but in my mind, any attention to sexual violence is a good thing, and the more prevention we can have on one aspect of sexual violence, we can translate it to others. So I'm just happy that there's actually a conversation that's happening about it now. We do have a lot farther to go. When you look at the statistics, the Department of Justice in 2007 sponsored the Campus Sexual Assault Study, which looked at the prevalence, nature, and reporting of various types of sexual assault experienced by university students. It was conducted of about 5,400 undergraduate women. 19% of these women experienced completed or attempted sexual assault since entering college. And the great majority of cases, about 75 to 80%, she knew her attacker. The women were usually susceptible earlier in college, usually freshman or sophomore years. And when they looked further at those that had been incapacitated due to substances, only about 2% reported the assault to law enforcement. And overall, only about 13% of survivors reported the crime to campus administration or campus police. The AAU report came out last month. I've not read it in detail, but I remember the numbers actually matched pretty closely to this. A lot of variation across the schools, but still pretty similar. Some of the things CDC is working on, I wanted to just highlight today before turning it over to our panelists. CDC is part of the White House Task Force to Protect Students from Sexual Assault. And last April, this task force released its first report, which had four action steps. The first one was on identifying the problem, doing campus climate surveys. And I think it just really reflects the need that this data is really hard to capture. If you look at crime reports or reports to campus, if we saw that 2%, you know, of those that were intoxicated are going to report, only 13% otherwise, we're not going to get a true picture of the numbers. So these surveys are really important to fill in the gaps. And I've said many times, and LB and I were at Emory together, that I was actually pleased when our numbers started increasing at Emory. Not everybody was pleased, but I was pleased because it meant that there was increased reporting. And I've always said I would never send my daughter to a school that had zero reports of sexual violence, because we certainly know that that doesn't mean that it's not happening. It means that there's no response to it. There's no culture around supporting it. So I think we need to embrace the idea of these campus climate surveys and then just use the data to inform action. Preventing sexual assault and engaging men. Federal law now requires schools to provide sexual assault prevention and awareness programs, and the White House Task Force turned to CDC's systematic review of prevention programs, and they reiterated the need for sustained, not brief or one-off programs. So again, not that awareness lecture, but systematic programs across all levels. And bystander intervention, which we're going to hear about from Jesse, was a main focus of the task force recommendation in this area. I, in particular, like bystander interventions because they show promise for reducing other types of violence, too, such as peer violence, bullying, dating violence. The third recommendation was around effectively responding when a student is sexually assaulted. So under federal law, when a school knows or reasonably should know that one of its students has been sexually assaulted, it is obligated to act. And I know LB is going to talk a little bit about this as well, but some of the things that the task force recommended include schools should identify trained, confidential victim advocates who can provide emergency and ongoing support. Schools should make it clear up front who on campus will or will not share that information with whom. And there should be an easily accessible sexual misconduct policy and specialized training for school officials and investigators. The fourth recommendation was really around increasing transparency and improving enforcement. And part of this launch was the website notalone.gov. The U.S. Department of Education Office for Civil Rights released enforcement data last year, and they also instituted time limits on negotiating voluntary resolution agreements and making clear that schools should provide survivors with interim relief pending an investigation. So essentially, people need to know how long it's going to take and what to do in the meantime, and that during the investigation, there still should be services provided, whether it's changing classes or accommodating the survivors' needs. And then last month, the Vice President announced a new resource guide. I hope you all have familiarized yourself with it. There's some great resources on there, including an online resource around campus climate surveys, prevention tools, which has a resource kit for campus health centers, technical assistance tools, examples of sexual violence misconduct policies, as well as several law and policy resources. It also highlighted the several of the grants that we just funded around sexual violence prevention. So this summer, our task force met again, and we held a think tank meeting to look at emerging promising practices to prevent campus sexual violence. This is part of the second action in the report. And this is a draft, but we really propose five components to the framework. The first one being comprehensive prevention. So again, across all four levels of the socio-ecological model. So individual, relationship, social, and environmental. So not just focusing on the individual level. And there's ways to combine this. So things like a bystander intervention program could be supported by a policy that mandates that incoming freshmen receive information on sexual violence prevention resources. So getting at different layers of it that way. Infrastructure, and everybody I think in injury and public health in general really wrestles with infrastructure, but you need basic infrastructure to provide, whether it's prevention or response resources. So it includes things like staffing, offices, and policies, and looking at ways to incorporate violence prevention with other prevention programs, so it's part of a campus wellness program. The audience, I think it's important to realize that a campus community is not a homogenous group made up of large and small communities. There might be more commuter schools, some that attract older students, more veterans, so really knowing what the audience of the campus is. Finally, or almost finally, partnerships and sustainability. It's one of those things where it's great to initiate these programs, but how do you sustain them? And so really working with a lot of the local rape crisis centers, a lot of the state resources, realizing that the college is part of the community, and so to engage the community around in a lot of these programs. And then evaluation. I'm from CDC, so of course I have to say evaluation, but really using the data to inform improvements. And we're working now with a lot of our rape prevention and education programs around what are the great practices they're doing, how can we evaluate what they're doing and then translate it across. Because again, it's good to know what works and what doesn't work so we can really replicate. And again, socio-ecological model. At CDC, our goal is really focusing on prevention of violence before it occurs. And so when you look at things like the individual level, risk factors include alcohol and drug use, early sexual initiation. Relationship level, risk factors for perpetration include family environment characterized by physical violence and conflict or childhood history of this. Community level, risk factors include things like lack of employment opportunities, tolerance of sexual violence within the community, and I think this is probably where we saw some of the issues on campuses, and weak community sanctions against sexual violence. At the societal level, norms that support sexual violence and norms that support male superiority and sexual entitlement are risk factors. We like to try to focus on protective factors, though, because risk factors are more difficult, and protective factors, I think, are where you can really scale things up. Unfortunately, there has not been a lot that have been identified to date, but some of the things that have been recognized so far include things like parental use of reasoning to resolve family conflict, emotional health and connectedness, academic achievement, as well as empathy and concern. So finally, one of the things that we will be releasing, hopefully in the next few months, I keep emailing my division director to find out when it's hitting clearance because it has not come to me yet. But we are working on a technical package to prevent sexual violence, and we do need to come up with a better name for it, but that's what we use at CDC. It's called a technical package, and it's really just a strategy of evidence-based solutions and programs. And we're releasing one in sexual violence and one in child maltreatment. Again, should be hitting clearance this week, and then out probably in the next few months after that. There's some components that I think are relevant to campus sexual violence from that, and the five things are promoting social norms that promote violence prevention, teaching skills to prevent violence, and a lot of times this really starts earlier than college, starts in early adolescence, providing opportunities to empower and support girls and women through things like leadership training and leadership opportunities, promoting safe environments, and this is both from a policy standpoint as well as truly from an environment, making sure, you know, green space, lighting, things like that, and then supporting survivors through interventions, because we know trauma-informed care is really important if we want to minimize secondary trauma or repeat victimizations or perpetrations. We want to make sure we've got appropriate support for survivors. So the federal government, including CDC, is playing its part, and when I came to CDC a year ago, we re-looked at our priorities, and we elevated sexual violence to one of our growth areas because we knew that this was really the time. It's got a lot of heightened attention to it. We know that there's strategies that can work, and so now it's about how do we work with our partners to really get this out there in the communities and disseminated and implemented. And it's really on all of us to prevent sexual violence. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Jesse next.
Yes, we got it.
To Jesse.
You.